Before we see the teachings of the following Mishnah, it's worth introducing what the Gemara in Kedushin tells us about the following two people of this Mishnah, Yehud ben Tabai and Shimon ben Shetach. One was the Nossi, the head of the Sanhedrin. One was the Av Beis Din, the deputy head. And they lived during the times of Yanai HaMelech, who was a very wicked king in Eretz Israel, so much so that he killed out most of the Talmidei Chachomim who lived in that generation. And he kept alive only Yehuda ben Tabai and Shimon ben Shetach. Yehuda ben Tabai because he managed to escape to Egypt, and Shimon ben Shetach because he was the king's wife's brother. But either way, since he killed out the vast majority of the Talmidei Chachomim of that generation, Yanai HaMelech replaced the previous members of the Sanhedrin with Tzedukim. Tzedukim were a group of people who had heretical beliefs. They didn't believe in all of the Torah. And the Sanhedrin became made up of Tzedukim, plus Shimon ben Shetach. He was left on the Sanhedrin. And slowly but surely, the Gemara tells us, Shimon ben Shetach managed to replace the Tzedukim members of the Sanhedrin for real, genuine Talmidei Chachomim, until ultimately the Sanhedrin was once again restored to being a body of real Talmidei Chachomim who were to judge the cases. Just based on this introduction, this really sheds a whole new light on the next two Mishnayos, where both Yehuda ben Tabai and Shimon ben Shetach are going to discuss things to do with the court, and how to behave, or perhaps not to behave, in the courts. So the Mishnah begins, Yehuda ben Tabai and Shimon ben Shetach, kibbutz mehem. Yehuda ben Tabai and Shimon ben Shetach received the Torah. They were the Talmidim, the students of the previous pair, Yehoshua ben Parachya and Ittai HaRbeili. And Yehuda ben Tabai says, he would say, Al tas atzmocha k'orcha dayonin. Don't make yourself like those who arranged and presented arguments in front of the judges. This is referring to sort of the equivalent of a lawyer who, rather than judging the both sides of the case and searching for the justice, he presents just one side of the argument and advises one of the litigants who is involved of different arguments which he could make. And it gives the impression that he's not searching for the truth, but rather only to make this person innocent. And at least during that time period, this was something very negative, to give the impression that you are not searching for the truth and the justice, but rather just to advise one of the litigants and trying to make him win. The impression which is given over is that you're not actually taking any regard of the truth. And when the two litigants, those who are involved in the case, are standing in front of you, and you're judging the case and you haven't yet given the verdict, you as the judge, both parties should be in your eyes considered like evil people. Meaning you need to suspect both of them in order that you'll make sure that any claim which is presented, you'll get to the bottom of, and any point which they make, you need to suspect them they are lying so that you can make sure that you reach the justice and give the correct verdict. That having been said, as soon as they leave you and you've given the verdict, both parties should be in your eyes as if they are innocent, even if one of them was pronounced guilty. One of them, let's say, it was ruled that he had to pay the other one money, and that his claim which he had made was or was not believed, was or was not accepted. Nevertheless, both parties should be in your eyes as if they are innocent. Once they have accepted upon themselves the verdict, they're now treated as every other individual is, and as we learned earlier on in this perek, you now need to judge them favorably. Even the person who is guilty, you should assume that he wasn't lying at all. Perhaps he made a mistake, he genuinely thought that his side of the argument was correct. And even if he didn't, now he is accepting the verdict, so it's a sign that he is at least repenting from his lies. The point is, once they have left the court, your regular obligation of judging every individual favorably returns. Mishnah Tes, Shimon ben Shetach Omer. Shimon ben Shetach says, once again talking to the judges who are in court, you should investigate and interrogate any witnesses who come before you in court extensively, once again in order to make sure to reach justice, to reach the correct, true decision and verdict. And you should be careful with your words, in case the two parties involved might learn from your words to lie. Meaning, don't ask questions which lead them to a particular answer. Is this not true that, for example, you're leading them to a particular answer which they're likely to say, even if it's not actually true, because your words are implying that that's really the answer which you're looking for. So use your wise words wisely, especially when you are in court. Mishnah Yud. Shmai Rav Talyain Kir Mehem. Shmai Rav Talyain received the Torah. They were the students of Yehuda ben Taba and Shimon ben Shetach. Interestingly, Shmai Rav Talyain were converts, or according to another opinion, they were at least the children of converts. And Shmaya Omer, Shmaya says, firstly, number one, Ehugas HaMelocha. You should love work. Being lazy and not doing things should bother you. Learn to adore productivity, doing things, achieving things. One who doesn't work at all can often be led to doing averus because he's got so much time on his hands and his mind becomes occupied with things which the Eight Sahara wants him to think about. Whereas if you're being productive and getting things done, then you won't have the time and the empty space in your mind to start veering off and doing averus. The Tiferes Yisrael adds that when somebody does something which they love and they enjoy doing, they do it much better and the time passes much quicker. He brings the example of Yaakov Avinu when he was working for Lavan for 7 years in order to be able to marry Rachel. The Pasuk says that because of his vast love for Rachel, that time went so quickly because he saw a purpose in what he was doing. And when that is the case, the work will be done both quicker and to a greater quality. Right, secondly, Usnas Harabonus, one should hate to receive a position of authority, of power, or honor. The Gemara goes so far to say that one of the things which can shorten one's life is holding a position like this. Of course, each case needs to be viewed in itself, but if somebody is only holding a position for his own arrogance and pride, then the Gemara says that this is something which can cause him to shorten his life. And regarding what exactly the connection is between the first and second points of this Mishnah, the Mishnah began by saying that you should love work, one explanation being that one should always try to be as productive as possible, never to waste any time, but constantly one should strive to achieve more and to learn more. That was point number one of the Mishnah. Point number two is that one should hate to have a position of authority or honor. One could suggest that the connection would be that as soon as anybody holds a position, even a position of honor which he should have, like being a respectable role, whatever it may be, that can often also cause him to not have as much time for him to be able to learn, because he'll start being taken from event to event, from simcha to simcha. Of course, the Mishnah is not saying that one shouldn't do this, but it happens to be, naturally, when one does hold a position like that, he ends up having less time, perhaps, for his own learning. And there's an unbelievable story told about Rav Reuven Bengis, who was a huge Talmud Chacham, and he used to make a siyum on all of Shas every once in a while, for on average once a year. He would make a siyum on the whole of Shas, and that was learning Shas in depth. And he was one of the greatest people in Yerushalayim, and he would invite other very big Talmud Chachomim to his siyum when he would make it, when he would finish Shas every time. And one time he held a siyum after finishing Shas, and then only a week and a half later, he invited everybody who had been there again for another siyum of Shas. And nobody really knew what was going on. They knew that he was a massive Talmud Chacham, but to finish Shas in a week and a half, that's impossible. Why is it that he's making another siyum? But either way, he invited them, they arrived, and at that siyum he got up and told them that ever since he became a Rav in Yerushalayim, so naturally he was schlepped from one simcha to another. One day he had a bris, another day he had a wedding, another day a bar mitzvah, whatever it may be, and a lot of his time was taken up by going to these various different events. And he decided to himself that I've always got these small gaps of time of 5 minutes here while they're waiting for the baby to arrive for the bris, 10 minutes here before the wedding, 2 minutes here, 5 minutes here. So I decided that I'm going to take advantage of these small pieces of time. And so I started a separate cycle to my regular cycle of learning Shas, had a separate cycle going on for these small gaps of time, where he would take out a small Gemara and learn a few lines at a time. And in that way, he took advantage of that time which he had almost every day at various points during the day waiting for different things. And he turned around to everybody in the room and told them, the siyum I'm making today is a siyum of all of Shas, which I merited to finish just from those 5 minute periods. That's how much one can achieve when he has that mindset of being productive, not of wasting time. Those small gaps of time add up over time until Rav Reuven Bengis managed to finish the entire Shas just from those few minutes at a time which he had whilst waiting for different things. So that story is just a nice side point, how these two points of the Mishnah, being productive and disliking a position of power, of honor, whatever it may be, how those two ideas might be connected. And the Mishnah ends off, Va'al tisvad al rashus, and don't make yourself known to the government authority, don't try to make connections there. It can lead to danger, and even if it doesn't, it will cause you to adopt the bad character trait of flattery, and it's best to avoid being too close to these government officials. Mishnah Yud Aleph, Avtalion, Omer Avtalion says, Chachomim, wise people, Hizaru b'dvarichem, be careful and cautious with your words, that which you say. Meaning when you say things, make sure it's entirely clear what your intention is, so that your words can't be misinterpreted. In case in the future you might be forced to go into exile, or be forced to move to another area, and you may end up being exiled and moving into an area of bad water, which is a reference to people who are apikorsim, heretics, people of perhaps lower moral conduct as well, and they might start to misinterpret what you are saying. And once you're no longer there, the students who come after you, once you're no longer there, they will drink from these waters, meaning they'll hear teachings in your name from these people, even though they'll be totally misinterpreted teachings, and you might have meant the exact opposite. And they'll end up dying as a result of receiving these warped teachings, which might be against the Torah because of how they were misinterpreted by the heretics. And it will emerge that Hashem's name will be desecrated, this will be a big chil Hashem. So make sure when you say things, once you are at the level that other people listen to you and take your words seriously, make sure that you also take your words very seriously, because there can be seriously negative consequences if you leave your words for interpretation. Another explanation of this Mishnah is given by the Medrash Shmuel, a slightly more novel interpretation, and that is that Avtalion is telling Chachomim to be careful with their words, meaning to practice what they preach. That which they tell people to do and instruct people to behave in a particular way, they should make sure that they themselves conduct themselves in the highest, best way of behavior, in case you'll end up being among people who see you behaving in a different way. And even if the way that you are behaving is actually totally permitted, but it can be interpreted in a way that it looks like you're doing something wrong, that is also a problem, because it will cause a chilul Hashem when people see a Talmud Chacham who appears to be doing something wrong.